Thanks very much, Richard. I thought I'd take a slightly different slant on it, in that I was thinking about putting a presentation together to show the reason, the call for action, if you like, the stats behind human trafficking. But then I thought all the attendees here will probably take that for read, and I'm sure some of the other presentations will cover that. So what I decided to do is focus on this presentation on how to engage business, and really kind of give our thoughts on a practical approach for business and what that means in the context of trafficking. So I just need to find the right button. Okay, so why is it important to raise awareness in business? And what are the ways that trafficking affects business? People immediately think of the supply chain, but actually it's much bigger than that. So I just want to touch on that during the presentation. And then also touch on the fact that you need a top-down approach, but it's also about bottom-up if you're really going to create an environment which prevents trafficking. And I apologise, I've got three slides just introducing finance against trafficking, so I'll skip over those very quickly, but I thought it was important just to give you the context. It was set up 4 or 5 years ago as part of Stop the Traffic, and it's really a group of business people with 20 odd years experience in business that met with Stop the Traffic, which is a campaigning organisation, and said, you know, if you really want to create change in the world, you really need to engage with business. So there's a place for campaigning, but there's also a place for engagement, and it demonstrates to business that it's good business to be ethical and prevent trafficking, and really give the businesses the tools to change, the reason to change, but also the tools to demonstrate they've changed so that they can reap the benefits from that. So we're a group of about, the steering committee is made up of about 30 individuals with a lot of experience in business. Probably around about a third of them are from the city in terms of banks or law firms that specialise in human rights law and in corporate law. And then we have people that have been CEOs of large companies. We have people that have worked in investor relations, anti-money laundering, etc. And then we have a group from law enforcement as well. So a group that can really look at take a forensic approach to proof and investigation in the case of trafficking. Our vision is to really provide businesses with practices that help them change and really create an environment where businesses become champions of change as well. So really support them in that effort. And we want to become the first port of call, if you like, for businesses that want to find out about this issue and, as I say, have practical tools to help them in this area. This is just a range of issues that we cover. As I mentioned, anti-money laundering, policies and procedures, down through supply chains, and then employee engagement and training, etc. So that's enough of that. Okay, so the issue. It's a complex diagram, but I think particularly for people that maybe haven't spent that much time in business, it's a diagram I hope that helps people understand actually how a typical company operates. So in the middle, we've got the four kind of key functional areas of a company, and each one of those is actually impacted by the risk of human trafficking. So just starting in the top left, we have the corporate functions, the governance functions, the ones that are responsible for compliance and reporting. And of course, a lot of the conversation today is around that area. If you look at the new modern slavery bill and the new disclosure regulations that are coming in. So that's one area that people in companies are thinking about. But another area that maybe we don't consider is the sales and marketing group. So in that area, you've got a lot of salespeople travelling around the world, you know, and you've got to think about where do they stay? Are they staying in hotels that you've audited? Is there a risk of trafficking in those hotels? What kind of transportation are they using? Taxis, etc. So there's an area there that if companies are really thinking about this, they need to consider. Then you've got the operations group. Well, of course, this is where we think about supply chain. But the issue people are grappling with is what's my span of control, if you like? So how far down my supply chain can I go and really be accountable for? So that's where we get onto all the blobs. So if you think about the orange blobs first, those are the areas which typical companies consider now when they're thinking about due diligence and their policies and compliance. So they have KYC, which means know your customer. You also have KYV, know your vendor, which is supply chain auditing. I mentioned already the governance and disclosure, anti-money laundering regulations, anti-bribery, etc. And if you go into operations, there's your supply chain audit down through the products, the components, and the materials that your company's using. But those audits only go so far, and they're really driven out of quality and compliance background, if you like, rather than human ethics. And I suppose if you think about it, let's just think of something that's not emotive. Let's say a company buying a bolt, right? So a company buying a bolt is really interested in the quality of that bolt and the traceability of the materials that go into that bolt. So actually, companies that buy bolts, funnily enough, are really geared up for this. And they'll go all the way back down the supply chain and they'll get what's called ladle analysis, which is basically a chemical analysis of the steel that's gone into the bolt and the mill that the steel came from. So you'd think, well, that'd be easy to audit the supply chain for human rights in that respect. But what about the open cast mine that the ore came from to make the bolts? The company can't go back there because ore is a commodity item which is traded worldwide. But it's actually in the mine that you probably have got the highest risk of human trafficking. So how does the company become accountable for trafficking in that context within its supply chain? And then, of course, going to something more emotive, this is similar to the garment industry, right? The analogy is the clothing company can go back to the garment factory very easily and audit back to that point. But what about the cloth that makes up the garment? What about the cotton that makes up the cloth? How far can they legally be required to go back, and how far is it reasonable for them to go back? So that's one layer of complexity. The next layer, of course, is that every product that a company uses is made up in itself of components and materials. And every component is made up of products and materials, and every one of those has got its own supply chain, which is equally complex. So that's where you get all those other blue globs. You can see every product has products, components, materials. And it's a never-ending cascade of complexity, which is global. So our proposition, therefore, is that really companies need to take a risk-based approach. There is a place for audit, yeah, absolutely, but actually for companies to practically implement this, they need to think about risk and where can I best spend my efforts? Where's the highest risk of human rights violations and trafficking? And let's focus on that. Okay, so that's kind of, because it's just too complex otherwise. So here's some pictures which are a lot easier than complicated diagrams. So the idea or the vision, therefore, is that, you know, you can work with company A and you can drop into the middle of company A and they can audit their supply chain out as far as they like. They can consider the materials that the back office is buying in terms of the food, the cleaning services, etc. that they're using. But you're only going to get so far. So what you need is company A, company B, company C, so that they start to overlap. So in the case of the bolt, you're auditing the bolt company, yes, or you're getting the bolt company to look at its supply chain, but you're also talking to the iron ore company about their mines. And this is kind of the only way you can really start to cover that complex supply chain, which is really part of every company. So what we've developed to help companies do this is what we call a chain checker, and it's quite pale, but across the top you've got the different functional areas. So you've got supply chain, you've got sourcing of products and services, so that's cleaning services, that's That's the product you're using to lean your company in terms of, you know, coffee, tea, biscuits, cleaning products, etc., paper, whatever it might be. You've got policies and practices, which is your disclosure and due diligence practices. You've got business travel, I mentioned that earlier. You've got property. Quite often people don't really think about property, but imagine you're a property owner and you're leasing that property out, and let's say the tenant might be, let's say, a massage parlour or a nail bar. And if they've actually taken part in human trafficking, then when you take rent from them, you're taking part, you're using, you're, if you like, falling foul of the anti-money laundering regulations, because you're helping them launder their cash. So you've got to think about the property that your company is using. And then we've got one on investment, which is actually quite a complex tree, but it considers things like equity investment. So if you are a shareholder in a company, how do you consider the efficacy of that company? But also from a business perspective, if you're investing debt in that company, or forming a joint venture, or even a partnership, or maybe acquiring a company. So there's a whole section on that in there around the due diligence you carry out to make sure that you're making an ethical investment. Now, every step of the way, there are simple questions with definitions of the key terms. And then if we go to the next page, you can see we also have information, so more of an educational piece, and case studies that they can click through on as well, and documents they can download. So it's very much a repository of know-how, if you like, with examples that companies can draw upon. You know, back in probably about 10 years ago when I started doing this, I went around to lots of NGOs and different organisations and talked about this issue. And, you know, they were doing a lot of good things, but what was happening was, because you're trying to work across many different sort of interest groups and across different countries and across different jurisdictions and legal systems, and they try to bring them all together to attack this issue, what you were ending up with was quite generic kind of aspirational statements or requirements. And that's great to set a framework for business, but it's very hard as a practitioner to actually implement something that addresses those issues. So what we're trying to do here is come up with some practical guidance, so that if you want to understand the UN guiding principles, you've got some tools and some examples of actually how you can do it in business. And at the end, you end up with a traffic light system which highlights your areas of risk in the business with some suggested actions that you might take to address that. So at the beginning I mentioned top-down, bottom-up, so I've just spent most of the presentation talking about top-down, but really if you're really interested in prevention, you've got to also address bottom-up. And bottom-up for us is about community engagement. So here I'm thinking more internationally than in the UK. I'm sure Neil will talk more about UK and migration, etc. But what I'm thinking about here is the need for companies to, yes, address their policies and procedures and their culture internally, if you like, but they also need to engage with the communities they're impacting, you know, within their business, or, if you like, at the end of their supply chains. And so, really, for us, that takes two forms. The first is community engagement, so that means working with the community leaders, often student groups, mothers, teenagers and children, to really educate them about the issue. What we find when we work in places like India is that families are in dire situations with a lot of debt, and their only asset, if you like, is their children. And they get tricked into selling their children for maybe $2 for a very young child, or $100 for a teenager. And this they see as a way out of debt. But they're doing it because they think their child is going to get a better life. The traffickers are very clever. They come with very glossy brochures that have got pictures of fantastic schools, of great working conditions in these factories, and then actually what happens is a child gets trafficked into a sweatshop in a garment factory, or sold into domestic servitude. And the families are unaware of this, so they need to run an educational program to make them aware of these situations. And also help them spot the traffickers, help them spot the kind of the indicators of trafficking in their communities. Often companies say to us, well, you know, we'll just run a course, we'll just run a little seminar, you know. No, this is much more about actually an ongoing community program, and it's about also educating the managers in the businesses so that they understand what's going on as well. The other point is building a sustainable community. So what's driving this, if you like, is the debt that the families are getting into. It's a simple model, but you know, there's lots of other issues, but let's just, I just want to keep it focused. But one example is the debt that families get into. And that, again, can be impacted by companies. So, you know, lots of the places we work with have already signed up to Fair Trade or Rainforest Alliance, and you'd think these communities would be traffic-free, but that's just not the case. Because what happens is the workers are getting a reasonable wage, but there's no control on the costs. So they're getting charged exorbitant amounts for education, for medical care, for electricity. And so it's given with one hand and taken away with the other, and the families end up in debt again. So what we talk to companies about is providing job security, contracts, providing union wages, but also providing access to education and healthcare at reasonable rates. And then if you can prevent the companies getting in, the communities getting into debt, that, if you like, removes one of the big drivers for trafficking. So this addresses the supply side, if you like, of trafficking, whereas the business piece I talked about at the beginning addresses the demand side for trafficking. So you're kind of touching both sides of the equation. And of course, I know I'm talking about a particular form of trafficking, and there's many forms, but I thought this would be an interesting one to focus on.